I was able to bring the processing time down by about 50%. So that one discovery helped me. And then I realized that we had something very, very commercial. And pretty much that's where everything began.
I'm Michael Gloster, and this is FashionCast. We're talking to fashion leaders and disruptors as we seek inspirational stories and expert insight into the world's most dynamic industry. Heard in over 70 countries, we're building an international fashion community based on fashion topics that matter. Please visit our website, fashioncast.co, to join our email list and learn more. Now, enjoy the show. On this episode of FashionCast, we introduce you to Graham Stewart, Executive Vice President, Fiber 52, a Houston, Texas-based textile sustainability company. Born in England and now living in South Carolina, USA, Graham started his career in 1976 and has unparalleled experience in the textiles industry. His position over the years include everything from marketing directorships to company chairman to founder and partner. He launched the Fiber 52 company in 2020. Graham Stewart joins FashionCast via Zoom from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Welcome to FashionCast, Graham. We're happy to have you here.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for inviting me on your podcast. I'm excited to be here also.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you. It's a real pleasure. Could you please share with our audience a summary of how you chose the textile industry as your career path?
Yeah, sure. I grew up in a textile manufacturing town, an industrial town in England. And in fact, the largest dye stuff producer in the world was just a few yards from where I lived.
Okay.
And I was surrounded by mills. There were 100 mills in the town. But the dye stuff company really piqued my interest as a child in chemistry. Pretty much I majored in chemistry at school, but left as early as I could to become a dyer. I had no way that I wanted to go into academia. And being a dyer allowed me, one, to practice as a dyer, but two, to attend eventually university on a part-time scale. And I got my honors degree, would you believe, in chemistry and coloration after about 6 years. But also, you know, being able to practice as well. We were the biggest dyers, or the largest dyers in Europe. We had 10 dye houses and some fabric manufacturing and yarn manufacturing and so on. So for the first 12 years of my working life, I was very much hands-on in dyeing just about every fiber you could think of.
Wow, that's really impressive. It's kind of like, you know, you didn't even have to be in the industry because you lived in the town where the industry was located. And it's kind of like here in Michigan with all the auto manufacturers, people just kind of live and breathe and understand that business. And so that's very impressive. Obviously, this is a town, it's in England. Where is it located?
In Yorkshire, which is the north of England, the largest county in England, with about 8 million people. The town, my town, was called Huddersfield, is called Huddersfield. But there are bigger towns like Bradford, cities, I should say, Bradford, Sheffield, Leeds, and then over the hills into Manchester, which was where the cotton industry of England actually is.
Okay, and like you said, was. So is this town that you grew up in, are they still dying, or has all of that been outsourced now?
Pretty much all of it's gone. You know, probably out of the 100 mills that were there, there's, I don't know, half a dozen left, maybe. But it's pretty much what a mirror image of what happened here following NAFTA.
Yeah, and of course, that's kind of the history of the fashion industry and of manufacturing in the fashion industry. But that's sad in a way. Maybe from a pollution standpoint, it's not sad, but we can talk about that. So how big is this particular part of the fashion industry? I think of it as the textile industry is part of the fashion industry. That's how I look at it. It's just one one piece of the huge, huge puzzle. Maybe you look at it differently, but in terms of revenue, how large is this bleaching and dyeing of cotton in terms of industry revenue?
Yeah, it's a big industry. Cotton is the production of cotton, and I should put it that way, amounts to 27 million tons a year. So it's quite enormous. It's a big industry. And the processing side of that, of course, is just as big. And that's where we are. But cotton is only second in volume to polyester in the world. But of course, we have an advantage in that we're not petrochemical based, which polyester is, and other man-made fibers, or should I say engineered fibers, are. So, you know, we do have a good shot at sustainability, even if the industry is not very good at it.
So we're going to get into the Fiber 52 process here in a second, but just as I'm thinking about it, is the Fiber 52 process going to allow for an extended life of that organic, basically organic product, cotton? Is it going to allow that to be recycled or easily recycled multiple times versus, you know, polyester, which is, and I get it, there's some technologies that are being advanced with regard to that, but not like cotton. So will Fiber 52 essentially allow for this recycling of the cotton material more than once?
Yeah, it's an important question you ask there, Michael, because, you know, recycling is a very important part of our world and becoming more important. With Fiber 52, the big advantage from that standpoint is that the cotton is stronger. It remains stronger than normal. So with normal processing, you're doing damage to the fibers themselves. And in most cases, in many cases, the majority of that fiber cannot be recycled into apparel.
Really?
I mean, here in South Carolina, there are a couple of really huge recycling plants, which I've visited. But a large majority of their production goes into, for instance, like in your city, it goes into automotive. And, you know, it's automotive noise insulation. It's not really going back into apparel. And so we hope to help that in that we can keep cotton stronger and longer for a longer time, if that answers your question.
Yeah, so what's the difference here between what happens in traditional bleaching and dyeing? What kinds of chemicals are used versus, you know, the Fiber 52 process?
Right, yeah. The traditional processing, which has been tradition for decades and decades, which hasn't changed dramatically, uses very heavy alkali, caustic soda. And what Fiber 52 does is takes that out of the system. So the majority of the world in cotton processing still is using caustic soda. And that's why, you know, we're a new company. We've got 10 staff now. We're moving very, very rapidly because our technology is being engaged by brands and manufacturers all over the globe. And many of them are in a hurry to get away from that traditional caustic heavy alkali processing, which is not good for people, and it certainly isn't good for the planet. So that's really the biggest basic change that we make with Fiber 52.
And so, of course, this is the all-important business question. So what is the cost differentiation, essentially? I mean, you're going to be able to scale. Obviously, you haven't scaled now because you're how many years old? 3 years old or so.
Yeah, but we only launched last year because our lawyers wouldn't let us out of the bag. You know, they didn't want us to have our IP compromised, let's say. And so we actually started in earnest last November with a press release, a small press release. And it's been like drinking from a hose ever since, which I'm pleased to say.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is one of those inventions and innovations that is so critical to, I think, this whole textile process. And it's one of those things that could only be discovered by someone like you, I mean, I'm sure as hell not going to discover this because I don't know anything about Texas. It's not something you just sit around and say, I wish they would have done this or that. So you really need someone deep in the weeds, and kudos to you for that. So where are we in terms of the cost differentiation?
Yeah, most people, and particularly the brands, say to us, you know, where are you cost for cost? And what tends to happen is that the cost comparison is at a product level. Yeah, like what does caustic soda cost versus the bioproducts that you're using? So what we have is three PhDs, three doctors in chemistry on our team, I should say chemistry and physics, and they work daily together on calculators. So the manufacturers and the brands can see exactly, you know, down to a tenth of a cent as to where we are versus where traditional processing is. So like for like, our products, our bioproducts and the normal chemicals are pretty similar in the total price. Where the difference exists is where in the process itself, in that, you know, we're using less energy, less water, less time, and in existing machinery. So there is a big gain there, depending on where you are in the world and depending on what kind of machinery you've got. But our calculators take that into consideration.
Yeah, they should. I mean, that's critical. And that's part of the beauty of this particular process is that you're saving energy and saving water and so forth. I'm kind of interested in where was Graham Stewart when he had this light bulb moment, you know, and said, hey, or was this something that was gradual? It just kind of, you were kind of thinking about it and testing some of the fabrics, or was there just an aha moment where you said, hey, I'm going to do this? And you can explain, I understand the fiber 52 has to do with the chromosomes in the plant, but it's a cool name. You know, I like the name too.
Thank you. Yeah, we do get a lot of questions on the name, to be honest. It was so hard to register any trademark with cotton in the title that we had to think of something else.
Well, and you thought out of the box. Yeah, perfect. That was perfect. Yeah. Okay. But did you have this aha moment or was this something very gradual over time?
There was no eureka moment, I can tell you. It was gradual in that I was, you know, in my work, I've always been a dyer and I've always got involved in dyeing. And in the past decade, I've spent a lot of time still in dye houses in the US. And what was astonishing to me is that in cotton process and other fibers, the industry just haven't moved on so much. So I actually started while I was hanging around in these dye houses waiting for my product to come through because it's a time-consuming process. What I started to do is to look at the existing recipes and to see if I could change them. Now, that took me around 2 years.
Wow.
till I got into a position where I realized I was getting there with the bioproducts that I was using. And there was a lot of discovery in that. But the big moment, if there was one, was when I discovered how to catalyze the whole process naturally. And that speeded up everything, because it meant that the whole process was reacted and reacted in very quickly. So I was able to bring the processing time down by about 50%. So that one discovery helped me. And then I realized that we had something very, very commercial. And pretty much that's where everything began.
So is Fiber 52 this process, you applied for patents or you have the patents?
We've applied for two patents, which are in the latter stages now. So we keep an eye on where we are with those patents. And we've applied for what are called PCTs all around the world. A lot of our investment is in that intellectual property. And, you know, we have to defend it, because one of the beauties of Fiber 52 is that you can transfer the process anywhere in the world within today, you know, within an hour or two. The downside is you can transfer it anywhere in the world, you know, an hour or two. So.
Well, yeah, and you'll notice I'm not even going to ask you about what's involved in the process, because I know you're not going to go there anyway, and I wouldn't expect you to. But it's just really exciting that you were able to focus in on this be concerned about it. Take your time. I mean, 2 years is a long time just to go back and forth, trial and error kind of thing. Apply for the patents. I mean, it's a very long process. I think that's what people need to know and understand. Anytime you're starting a business, boy, you better be stoic. You better have some big time patience, because you can get creamed pretty quickly. And I love what you're doing. I think this is a real important point from a legal standpoint. Yeah, I mean, you are, and you have to protect this particular process or this particular patent. It's not even a copyright or a trademark. It's really this patent that's so critical. So I love that. What is the overall mission? Okay, so you came up with the patent, you came up with the idea, and now you can use it. Have you kind of shoehorned that idea into a mission, or did you have a mission about what you wanted to do in terms of textiles and cotton and bleaching and dyeing and sustainability before all this started to roll?
Yeah, my eye was on, yes, of course, sustainability. It's always been dear to my heart. But also, we want to deliver this sustainable process on a global level, because it is a mass market opportunity to be more sustainable. And, you know, there's a long way to go. But we would like to see fiber 52 processing, or the method, adopted on a global scale. And that's what we're working to. That's why we're working with the largest brands in the world, just about all of them. We're doing trials all over the world, and those are going very, very quickly. And so we're in the major textile producing centers of the world. And even we have our own employees now in those centers.
So wouldn't it be advantageous for any brand? You pick the brand, you know, for example, let's just say it's Levi's. And Levi's has done some work in terms of sustainability, organic cotton, some of the dyes that are organic, et cetera. I think it'd be, you know, I'm just speaking out loud. Wouldn't it be nice to have a little sticker or something, a patch inside the jeans that says Fiber 52? And then I know that this was made in a very sustainable process.
Yeah, good, really good point. You know, we aim to be an ingredient brand, you know, something like, for, let's say, Intel Inside, or
yeah,
more in our industry, like Gore-Tex, where we are an ingredient brand. We're an important ingredient brand. And we're working with brands to have Fiber 52 featured. And therefore, part of that will be, you know, to have some kind of barcode or whatever, QR code, where you can actually put your phone on it and you'll be able to see what Fiber 52 is about. But also, we're working hard to track, and this is part of the IP process, in that we're working hard to track Fiber 52 right from the beginning, from when the fiber goes into a machine or the fabric goes into a machine. We want to track that process all the way through, right through into a garment. It's good for us, but it's also good for the consumer, in that the consumers can find where their product came from.
Yeah, this is a bonanza for Fiber 52, just to have your name on every piece of clothing that's part of that process. And I think it's a bonanza really for the brands too, to know and understand, and then have, like you said, the QR code. That's exciting too. I'm curious, though, with regard to Fiber 52, are you testing this on other textiles other than cotton? And what are the outcomes with regard to that, if indeed you are?
Yeah, the other cellulosic fibers are quite important. So these are secondary celluloses, which, you know, there's like Modal and Tencel out there, which are, again, those are big fibers, you know, in the fashion industry. And this process works on those fibers too. So, you know, we can bleach and dye those fibers with this, pretty much the same products that we use on cotton. The other thing is that, yes, cotton does tend to get blended with fibers like polyester. But providing the majority of the constitution of the fabric or the yarn or is cotton, you know, at least 50% of it is, then this process works pretty well there too.
So if I'm a designer, I'm in New York, I hear the show, I look up Fiber 52, I'm really interested, I want to build my next collection around this particular type of process. How does the designer class reach out to whomever is utilizing Fiber 52? How do they make contact?
Yeah, good point. There are two ways. One, obviously, our website gives you all the details, you know, fiber52.com. But in a practical sense, how it works, and this is what's happening daily in my world, is that a designer will contact us, and he or she will have her own, he or she will have his or her suppliers, and we can work with those suppliers. It usually happens with an NDA, and then very quickly we give them the process, and away you go and do trials. The other way is that a designer can come to us, and we can introduce that designer to mills around the world that are using Fiber 52 in their process. I mean, right now, only in the past few weeks, a T-shirt maker from London said, "Hey, we'd love to work with Fiber 52, but how do we do it?" And we introduced them to a mill in Italy, and they're already going, you know, so it happens pretty quickly.
So you just answered the question. That's perfect. You just had someone ask the exact same question. That's beautiful. We will be right back after this message from Omei Organics.
Hi, I'm Christine. You may know me as co-host of Fashion Cast, but I'm also the founder and CEO of Omei Organics. I believe skincare should be simple. Our hyaluronic cream is all you need to nourish your skin morning and night. Sourced from the highest quality organic ingredients from around the world and manufactured in an FDA facility right here in the USA, this incredible cream works to firm, deeply moisturize, and smooth the appearance of your skin. Please visit omeiorganics.com and use promo code FASHIONCAST to receive a 15% discount off your first purchase, and you will receive our monthly newsletter free. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We're with Graham Stewart from Fiber 52. Graham, I just wanted to ask you, what are the real advantages of Fiber 52 to the manufacturing process, to the brands, to the consumers? You know, those three big groups, you know, if you could narrow down what the advantages are of this particular process to each of them.
For the manufacturer, to begin with the manufacturer, for them, even for their people, we're not using these heavy products, these heavy chemicals. We're using bioproduct, which is much gentler for the people involved in production. But also, you know, in textiles, one big issue is effluent. And therefore, you know, the water that's used in certain parts of the world and in many of the manufacturing countries of the world, water is a very scarce resource. And, you know, we can cut the water profile down by usage down by 50%, up to 50%. And I use up to advisedly because machinery varies so much in the amount of water that's used. But also in traditional manufacturing, there are multiple wash-offs, which with Fiber 52, you don't have to do that. The other advantage then, if you take it from a brand perspective, is that their manufacturers are working in a much more sustainable manner. And let's face it, you know, we all know that fashion's in the crosshairs of not only the environmentalists, but regulators as well. And so, you know, we see this in Italy. We have a team of three in Italy. Our team Italia, you know, they feed us the information of legislation that's hitting now. They know it's the train's coming down the track. And so we can help, you know, we're a resource for brands as well to help them get into a more sustainable space and tell a more sustainable story, but also have the visibility into manufacturing for them, which is really important. And that's the same for the consumer, I think, is the third leg here, is that consumers are demanding much more information, much more education, and much more visibility as to where their product or where their consumer product comes from.
And doesn't a Fiber 52 product piece of apparel wear a bit differently than a regular piece of apparel or cotton apparel that's processed under the traditional dyeing and bleaching way? Doesn't it wear different in terms of how it feels and that kind of thing?
Absolutely, yeah. As we're processing in a more natural way, we're leaving the cotton in a more natural state. Right now with the heavy chemicals, all the, as it's called, the vegetable matter, the oils, the waxes, are completely taken out. With Fiber 52, we don't actually do that. We preserve some of that. And in that case, you know, in many cases, you don't have to use the softeners that are used in textile processing or the lubricants. And again, that's a money-saving thing, but it's also an environmental issue. But also in doing that, we leave the strength in the fiber as well. And so what people notice is just how much softer Fiber 52 is as opposed to the traditional process.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I love about what you're doing is this is really kind of the industry leading rather than the consumer asking for it. Because most consumers, let's face it, don't know what the hell is in their apparel, right? How it's made, where it came from. They're just looking for, does this fit? Is it least expensive? Does it look great? Whatever. Is it fashionable? Is it on trend? So it's really, and this has been an argument of many of us for a long time, is that the industry needs to step up and just take over that piece of questioning in terms of sustainability. So that's what one of the great things I love about Fiber 52 is you guys have stepped forward and said, okay, we're going to take care of this and here's how we're going to do it. And it doesn't matter if you get it or not, it's just going to be better for everybody.
That's right. You know, it's better all around. And as I say, I think that, you know, environmental regulation is going to play a big part for consumer too, because the consumer is going to hear more and more about it. And as we said earlier, in Fiber 52, we want to be part of a brand's branding process in that they can use Fiber 52 if they want. And if, you know, in their branding as an ingredient brand, they don't have to, by the way. It's entirely a choice. We don't insist upon it, but we hope that we can make ourselves meaningful both to brand and consumer in that respect.
So China and India dominate the world cotton production. Do they dominate this whole bleaching and dyeing production also or not?
They're both large in this bleaching and dyeing space, yes. I mean, China's textile industry and India's growing textile industry are already huge. But what we see is a lot of production in Central America. And, you know, even my colleagues are flying down to Honduras as we speak, in that... there's a lot going on there, and capacity is being added by the day. It's a huge area of production.
So Central America is one of the possible potential avenues to thwart off some of this competition from China. Because, you know, again, I don't believe China really cares if they're making or if they're bleaching and dyeing cotton with chemically based processes. They don't really care. So that's very interesting that you're opening up this different market that's in Central America. So who else are key players in this? Obviously, the United States is far down the line, but they are a major cotton producer, but they're top five, I guess.
Yeah, America has a phenomenal heritage in cotton, let's face it. And, you know, where my company is based in Texas, it's the biggest producer of American cotton. America is important from a brand standpoint in that the brands that we're dealing with, to answer your question, we're also being directed into Bangladesh. And so we have a full-time employee, another doctor in chemistry based in Bangladesh, and he's in India today, would you believe? So he's having to run trials in India, then he's getting back to Bangladesh and then going to Pakistan, because Pakistan's also a huge area for cotton production.
So what and who is your target market? Is Fiber 52, when you sit down and you're looking at your business plan, are you saying the target market for us is primarily manufacturers, or is it primarily brands, or all of the above?
Well, all of the above, because we started off, my focus was on manufacturers. What I found, I think a little bit, when you interviewed Alex in that excellent podcast, where you were talking to Alex of Genealogia, if I pronounced that correctly, you know, he was talking about the resistance that he's had from manufacturers. Yes, they can't sell their product to everybody in the jeanswear industry. We've had the same kind of issue in that people have said, look, we don't have time for this. It's a change. It's actually not that difficult. It's a very easy change. But manufacturers we found were resistant because they just come off a pandemic. They're trying to recover, you know, their markets. And the brands have been wonderful in that, you know, brands have embraced Fiber 52 and they go to their manufacturers and say, hey, try this, give it a go. And that makes the difference. So that's pretty much where we are right now.
So in terms of the manufacturing, you're saying if I'm manufacturing whatever, this cotton, and I'm using the traditional bleach and dye process and Fiber 52 comes in, what do I have to change or what do I not have to change? What is the real cost that it's going to cost me as a business to ramp up and use Fiber 52? Do I have to change all my equipment or not?
No, your equipment doesn't change. So Fiber 52 works with existing dyeing equipment, so you don't have to invest in that. As far as the products are concerned, it's merely a change. It's not a cost. You're just using a bioproduct versus... So, you know, the container that you take to the machine just has a different product in it, but there are less products. We cut down the recipes of these guys quite considerably. So only last week I was in a dye house conducting trials, and the guys on the shop floor, I've done probably 20 trials in this dye house. The guys on the shop floor, they said, this is real easy because we've got less product, less steps, much less time, and guess what? We're not getting caustic soda on ourselves. So it is easy, very, very easy. So once manufacturers see that, then, you know, actually transferring Fiber 52 into their dye house doesn't cost them anything, and it's very easy to do.
Yeah, you sold me. I mean, that's a heck of a elevator sales pitch right there, what you just said. You mentioned Genealogia earlier, out of Spain, another big company there that's doing a lot of work in terms of fiber recycling is Recover. They're out of Spain. That seems to be the hot spot, apparently. But is Fiber 52 looking to collaborate with some of those leading companies that have been thinking about sustainability and textiles and how to help brands? It seems to me this is like the third leg of the stool type of thing, but, you know, maybe not. Have you thought about just collaborating with some of these other companies that are on the same path but not doing the same thing?
Absolutely. Let me say that our issue to now has been bandwidth, in that we've, you know, a small team and suddenly the word got out and we're trying to deal with people all over the world. So, yeah, collaboration is so important for all of us. So I see this being very collaborative all over the world. And, you know, the two brands that you mentioned there, you know, they've been in this space a lot longer than we have. Therefore, I think we do live in parallel worlds. And one of our associates is an associate with Recover. So I think that hopefully we can engage with Recover quite quickly. But also, you know, the amazing work that people like Genealogia do, if we could be part of that, we would be absolutely delighted. So, yeah, collaboration's a big one for us.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have a choice. They may have to bring you guys on board. I mean, it seems like there's a natural fit. We're kind of winding it down, and I wanted to mention that, you know, you've been in the textile industry, fashion industry for many decades. You've done some incredible work, had your own company. This is a key company for you too, I think, in terms of your career. Very successful. You know, what words of advice, do you ever just look back and see yourself as a mentor? You know, what words of advice would you give some of these younger folks that are just starting into the industry, or they've been in the industry for a few years and they're just starting their careers? You know, what makes a difference on a long-term basis to success in this industry?
Yeah, I mean, the guys who've got a passion for this industry, and whether it be fashion or manufacturing, whatever it may be, I think for me, what helped my career greatly, and it was quite by accident, was education. I wasn't just the practical guy, because I had lots and lots of people who were my age who just didn't bother with the education side of things. And you can see how that doesn't help the career. Right. So it's one thing to have the practical experience, but try and make some time, you know, to get into education. And there are so many wonderful courses available. For instance, we do a lot of work with NC State, Wilson College, in North Carolina, where I think in that college alone, there are 26,000 students. But it's not just full-time education. There's also lots of other opportunities for education. And there are so many societies within textiles where you can find education. And now it's much easier because it's online. You know, in my day, I had to drive 1 hour just to get to college. it's a different world now. And so, yeah, please try and educate, but also, you know, keep your eye on sustainability. I think it's something that, without thinking about it, there's been a constant in my life, and I'm really happy I'm still here and working on sustainable process.
Well, we're all glad you are. Graham Stewart, it has been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you for appearing on FashionCast.
Thanks, Michael. It's been wonderful. Thanks for inviting me on your wonderful pod.
Thank you for listening to FashionCast. To hear more shows and join our email list, please visit our website, fashioncast.co. You can also join us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcast. Until next time, I'm Michael Gloucester for FashionCast, the voice of fashion.